Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebrov.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
The Dravel. The March international break is upon us. This week, Ukraine journeys back to the Balkans to take on Bosnia-Herzegovina as both sides aim to reach Germany for this summer's European Championship. It's a team that Ukraine faced not too long ago on paper, but in reality, it feels like a lifetime since that 2-0 win in Zenica back in November 2021. While this week, we are doing a deep dive ahead of this crunch time. Ukraine, Bosnia, we've got you covered.
And it's a historic moment for this podcast because we've got our first ever sponsor. WatchUPL.com is the only official place to watch the majority of UPL games in the UK, USA and Canada. Stream games from any phone or computer, utilize the live chat to discuss big moments with other fans during games, and if you can't catch the matches live, then you have access to HD replays anytime, on demand. Show your support for Ukrainian football and the UPL by tuning in to watch matches from all clubs during the second half of the season, with the exception of Dynamo Dnipro 1 and Zorya home games. There's no better place to watch LNZ versus Minai this upcoming weekend, yes, even during the international break, or 7 of the 8 UPL games coming up in match day 22 after the international break, then watchupl.com. Get involved, guys.
And who better to help Andrew and I dissect this week's playoff tie than friend of the pod, Bosnian sports journalist Haris Makonja, who works for the broadcaster N1. Haris, welcome back. It's great to see you.
Thank you, boys. It's an honor to be here with you again. And I hope we have a great discussion about the upcoming tie between Bosnia and Ukraine.
Well, let's get cracking. Andrew, the domestic-based players have relocated to Marbella. How's the squad shaping up ahead of this crunch window for the Ukrainian national team?
Well, I think it's pretty standard in regards to the squad list that we saw from Sergey Rebrov, which was unveiled in, I guess, a unique way for UAF. Or a first of its kind. They followed the example of countries such as England and Brazil and elsewhere, where they unveiled the squad list live in a press conference at the House of Football in Kyiv. And then straight after that, Sergey Rebrov took questions from journalists who were in the building. It went all okay. There was nothing particularly surprising in the squad. However, there was some slight controversy ahead of the squad unveiling, because a few days before that, the Ministry of Sport in Ukraine decided to release a list of Ukrainians that were meant to be traveling to Bosnia or who were given like special permission or something like that. And it contained a list of players that wasn't entirely accurate. And when this actual squad came out, there were a few different changes, because that initial list that the Ministry of Sport leaked came at least 3 or 4 weeks before this actual squad was announced. So there's not too many surprises, bar obviously the enforced substitutions for particular players that are injured, but more on that shortly. Three regular goalkeepers, Bushchan, Trubin, Lunin. For the past sort of few days, Nesteret has also been with the team from the under-21s. obviously to ensure that Bushjan and the rest of the squad that were domestically based and in Marbella had another keeper to play against, because otherwise we would be seeing, you know, some of the outfielders getting in goal, maybe with Jamov stepping in. But standard goalkeepers, defenders, not much that's problematic there. All the usuals in there: Karavayev, Popov, Matvienko, Konoplya, Bondar, Mykolenko, Zobani. And then Maxim Taloverov has got sort of a proper call up again. Might he make his debut? We'll have to wait and see. Bogdan Mihailichenko has also got himself a recall after moving to Polisa this winter window. I think he's important to have over maybe the likes of Edward Sobol, who's not been playing too consistently. This might be the better option, in my opinion, for left back, or even someone that needs to be anywhere down that left hand side, with Mudrik being the only left winger per se. And then midfield, you've got Zubkov, Sudakov, Shaparenko, Zinchenko, Malinovsky, Sidorchuk, and Pikhalyonok. And then you've also got Tsiankov. We'll be talking about him in a minute. And Brashko, who's been called up. Brashko, for obvious reasons, because Stepanenko's injured. And we'll be touching on that very shortly. And then you get to the forwards. And in the forward list, there's four of them. So you've got Dovbit, Yaremchuk, Sikan, and Vanat. So Vanat won't be with the under-21s this month, which I think for some people it's a bit surprising. Why has Rebrov called up four forwards when he plays with one striker usually? And in the press conference that I just mentioned, Rebrov said that he's called up Vanat because he's got different profiles to some of the other players. So that's interesting to hear. And obviously he's been scoring freely in the UPL. So that's also a good top scorer at the moment, I think, with 10 goals in around 16, 17 games. So that's also good to see from his respect. And then on the reserve list, Riznik's on there, Nazarina, Timchik and Hutsulak. Timchik and Hutsulak, due to, I guess, injuries or precautionary stuff, have also joined with the main squad. So in total, Tahir Brothers got 28 or so players to choose from in this particular window. He's obviously got the next few days to train with them before the actual game on Thursday. And then all of the domestic players have been in Marbella since last Thursday. So preparations there, and the likes of Zabarni, Mykolenko, Zinchenko have also linked up with the squad early because their respective Premier League sides didn't play this past weekend due to the FA Cup and other things. And then expecting the remainder of the foreign-based players that we've just all mentioned to link up when you're listening to this in the remaining days. So it's all fine and dandy. Let's see what this squad can sort of produce with that. Of course, Andriy Yarmolenko not available due to his injury. No potential recall, I guess, going forward for Yevhen Konoplyanka. That's a joke, obviously, because he's apparently expected to announce his retirement very soon to become an agent. I think the main talking points that we're going to touch on right now is that of an injury to Taras Stepanenko. So he's been out for the past few weeks. He was rushed back a bit from injury that he picked up over the winter break. And you could say that it may have caused, you know, further issues. And as a result, he's not playing in this crunch time. And obviously, we know what Stepanenko's like. No-nonsense defensive midfielder, integral to the spine of the team. One of those irreplaceable players, I would say. A player that you don't really realise is not there until he isn't. And yeah, so he is 100% out of the first tie against Bosnia. He might come back, Rebrov said, for the second game, whether it's a friendly or whether it's a final. He may be back for that particular one. But in his place, as a result of that, we've got a first ever call-up to under-21 captain, Volodymyr Brashko. So he is also a central defensive midfielder, plays for Dynamo Kyiv, has become a starter for the team this season ever since Serhii Sidorchuk, who's also in the team and who's most likely to start versus Bosnia in that holding midfield role. He's the one that's replaced Sidorchuk at Dynamo Kyiv in that holding midfield role. So He's been playing really well. He impressed at the Euros, the under 21 Euros last summer. So it's looking good from that perspective that he's got that call up and that maybe, you don't know, there's a chance for him to make his debut in this game or even against Iceland or Israel in the second one, regardless of what that game ends up being. And then the other big problem. So, of course, we've got Stepanenko's out, kind of a biggie. And then last weekend, in terms of a week ago, Ukraine's talismanic player, I would say, of the moment, Viktor Tsakhnov, went down with a knee injury after assisting a goal for Girona. And he has ended up missing the game against Hetafe. But there are chances that he might recover ahead of the Bosnia game. So, as it stands right now, I'm pretty sure that he is with the squad in Marbella because it's not too far from Girona up in the north of Spain down there. And the doctors will be assessing him whether he will be available to play. Serhii Bobrov, there was a kind of special press conference that Ukraine had just before they left on the train from Kiev all the way to Poland last Wednesday. And he said that essentially he's positive about it, but similarly, we've got 28 other players who will be able to help us. So it shouldn't be too problematic and all hope shouldn't be resting on Tsakhnov. But we know how influential he has been in the qualifying campaign. Came out really, clutch in a number of moments where he put in a number of assists, got some crucial goals. So if he isn't going to play, it's going to be a big loss. And most likely on that right-hand side, we'll see probably Zubkov deputised there, which is not the end of the world, but he's nowhere near as impactful or clinical, I'd say, as Tsakhnov.
Certainly an interesting time, isn't it, for the national team. Personally, very happy to see Brazko in. And I mean, Andrew, you say that Sidorchuk is expected to start, but do you want to see Sidorchuk start in that place? Me personally, I'd rather see the youngster given a chance.
I just think that the reality of the situation to throw Brashko straight in into this game when he probably wouldn't have got a call up if Stepanenko was fit, I just don't see it happening. Yeah, it would be cool and interesting if it did, but I just don't see it. So, maybe Yurebrov will spring a surprise or something and start with both of them or go ultra defensive and like two forwards or something crazy. But I think that's unlikely. I'm not going to lie. And we're going to have to deal with Sidorchuk maybe for 60, 70 minutes. And then maybe we might see Brashko come in, for the final 20 to see, depending on how the result goes, because that's usually when Sidorchuk comes on for Stepanenko, who can't last 90 minutes himself a lot these days. So this, I guess, this window might be a perfect opportunity to see what the future looks like for Ukraine in that spine.
And for me, it's an exciting one. Before we go into the window, it's an exciting one, and it's great to see so many young players being called up now. We're going to have, well, let's jump straight into it. I mean, how often have we had such a dilemma in the goalkeeping position, given how young those goalkeepers are as well? You've got Lunin and Trubin putting in immense performances on the Iberian Peninsula down there, really standing out, stepping up. I mean, I'm glad I'm not Sergei Rebrov. I think he's going to have a real headache picking, deciding which one of those takes the lead. Personally, Trubin, but Andrew, you're going to go against me again on this one?
I'm just basing on how I think that Rebrov will set up. Based on the fact that Trubin was the number one choice goalkeeper throughout qualifying, I think that Rebrov probably won't want to switch up too much in that respect. However, going on form, the Lunin has just been absolutely unbelievable in the Champions League, also in La Liga too. So it's a dilemma for him and obviously Hujamov, who's Rebrov's goalkeeping coach, and we'll have to wait and see who he goes for, which I think will probably be a question right up until the day of the match. But if I saw Trubin there, it just wouldn't be a surprise for me, just on the basis that he has been preferred over, you know. And I just don't see there's going to be that many like surprising changes, like I mentioned. So I've read somewhere like, oh, what if Ukraine go for two up top or something like that? I just don't think that that's like realistic at the moment, you know, to try and instill some completely new tactical style, regardless of the fact that Ukraine have had this Marbella training camp. Let's not forget the majority of the players there were just the domestic based players, and I mean half of them will be on the bench or not in the match day squad just because of how the numbers work out these days, and the other sort of foreign based players will all be arriving when you're listening to this podcast on Monday or you know around that time. Zinchenko himself, he's not been playing a lot recently. He came on in the Champions League round of 16 game against Porto in the second half of extra time. And, you know, that's 15 minutes. And then he came on in the league game just before for a few minutes. So he's not really had that much game time himself since recovering from injury, which he's been out for, you know, over a month and a half plus. So that's another question. I think he will start, but what sort of shape is he in? Because he's had a few off performances for Ukraine in the qualifying campaign. He's not been at his best, and we know that he can be a lot better. So hopefully, you know, even if it's just pure emotions or something like that, he can just sort of get himself, you know, through that momentum, and work on helping the team.
Harris, can I turn? I'm going to turn to you here now. We're discussing the Ukrainian team here, of course. And what's the view over in Bosnia at the moment about the Ukrainian team? Is it one that's has got a bit of respect for, or you know, what's the take on it going into this game?
Yeah, for sure. I think respect is the right word to go about it, because relatively recently we played a couple of matches and we all know how that went. And since we've seen firsthand what Ukraine can do, there's certainly a certain level of respect towards the Ukrainian team, so much so that here in Bosnia, the Ukrainians are considered favorites, and not by a close margin. I mean, they're not heavy favorites, but we're considering them to the favorites to go through to the playoff finals. On the other hand, everybody's like conscious of the fact that Ukraine, if it was that good of a side, they wouldn't be playing the playoffs like we're doing. So the fans and the media, I think they're thinking about it this way, that Ukraine is definitely beatable, but it's gonna be we're gonna have to play close to our best football to achieve a result that we want, which is to go through to the final. And from the four national teams that are in this playoff, we consider in Bosnia generally that Ukraine is the strongest one, given the individuals that you have in your squad, the form that they're in, especially the Girona guys in Spain that have been tearing it up in the first half of this season, maybe slowed down a little bit in the second half. But definitely in Bosnia, there's this sense of cautiousness. But what's different from the last time that we spoke a couple of years ago, there was this I don't even know how to describe it. There was this pessimism last time that we were not going to win a match between Bosnia and Ukraine, either match, and that's what happened. This time around, we feel that we have a bigger of a chance because it's not two games, it's not a league system like qualification system. It's a single match. We're playing at home, We have players that are in good form at the moment, and I'm gonna, if you let me, I'm gonna go later and tell you about some of the individuals that have been doing very well in the in recent weeks. So you guys also can know who to watch for when Bosnia plays on March 21st. But yeah, there's definitely a different vibe from the last time that Bosnia played that Bosnia played Ukraine. Respect, yes, but no fear and no defeatism that we may have seen last time around when these two national teams played.
Instead of keeping our listeners on tenterhooks there, who are these players? Who are they?
You got Nikola Vasil, who is a goalkeeper for St. Pauli. He is a player from the second Bundesliga, but he's been very, very good. He's been the best goalkeeper. He's conceded the least amount of goals this season in the second Bundesliga. And in the form that he's playing right now, he almost certainly deserves to be in a lot of the teams in the first German league. No. So he's one of the players that's been really, really good from for Bosnia in recent weeks and months. You have the standard guys that are Sead Kolašinac, and he's been also in good form. One of the players that is in good form but won't be playing in the tie against Ukraine is Adrian Leon Barišić, who is a center back for Basel in Austria, who has suffered an injury since the squad list came out, and Savo Milošević was counting on him, but in the last match in the league, he suffered an injury. And he won't be able to make it. We're still waiting to see who's going to be called up to replace him. But he was one of the guys that was heavily counted on in this tie. You have also Ivan Bašić from Orenburg, who is also playing relatively well, and the legend Miralem Pjanić, who is always capable of doing something great in a match, even given the fact that he is a little bit older and a little bit maybe heavier than he should be at this stage of his of his career. But what he can't do in terms of running, Haris Hayradinović is going to make up. This dude is tearing it up in the Turkish league, and he's the best assist man in the league at the moment. I think 16 assists in this season in the last matches of the qualification group for the European Championships has been one of the biggest surprises and best players for Bosnia and Herzegovina. So he deserved to be called back up again. And then you have, of course, the leader Edin Džeko, who maybe is not in great form, but he plays 90 minutes every game, and he's a great leader on the pitch. And with his leadership skills and his like physique and heavy frame, he can be really, really dangerous for Ukraine. Ermedin Demirović. Guys, Bundesliga, this guy has been a goal scoring machine this season. So he's the one that you should be paying attention to. He's probably going to be paired with Edin Džeko up front. We're not really sure when the squad list came out. We were not really sure what formation Savo Milošević is going to use. He's relatively new to the coaching position. And he said in the beginning that we would be playing a 4-2-3-1, but I don't see any kind of wingers of half or half wingers in this squad. We're probably going to play a 3-5-2 with Demirović and Džeko up front, with Džeko like kind of acting like a magnet for defenders, and that will have to close him down. And this will hopefully, in Savo Milošević's head, open some space for Demirović, who is much quicker, much younger, and much more deadly this season. So that's just a few players that are kind of
the ones to watch in the tie against Ukraine. Not only the older players, but also the newer players in the national team that have been really, really good and will be dangerous to Ukraine in this tie.
We know Vasil quite well. Obviously, he was at Zorya back in the day. So it's good to see that he, well, good to hear that he's doing so well at
Correct.
Sampdoli, because he had a quite a good, he left quite a good impression when he was in Ukraine. So that's quite interesting to hear.
Yeah,
But hopefully.
it's going to be between him and Šehić. Šehić has been injured as of late. He just came back from a knee injury and he missed months of football. So him being the first goalkeeper and having Vasil in such good form is going to give some headaches to Savo Milošević, and he's going to have to make a tough decision when he's going to decide who's going to start the match against Ukraine.
It's talking of Sabah. I mean, for me, there's a personal co connection to him growing up in the West Midlands in the 90s and spending many a year in the Holt End watch catching his shots as they flew past the goal into the stand behind. As you say, he's quite new to the management game, very new to the job. What sort of impact has he had since taking over in charge of the national team there?
Well, he's been in charge for only, I think, 4 matches so far. So it's really difficult to see a revolution in the way that Bosnia plays. The biggest impact I think he's had is his charisma, because he's a very positive person. He's very energetic, and I think that this kind of energy has to be transferred to the players. That's something that previous coaches, and we've had three in only 1 year, so you can imagine that something's bad is going on is in the Bosnian national team. We needed someone that could essentially regroup the players and make them a unit again. Watching these group of players like Yusuf Gazibegović from Sturm and Amar Dedić, one of the most potent right backs in Europe, in my humble opinion, from RB Salzburg, and other players. They're great individuals, but the problem has been that we haven't been a team since the golden team from Bosnia and Herzegovina in the 2010s, and in the middle of the 2010s started to fall apart because of players going out because of various reasons, mostly old age. We have to find that sense of being united force that is driving the team to better results. We've been plummeting in the FIFA rankings for years now. I think we're number 69 at the moment. Our best placement was 13 in 2014, I think. It's not been very a successful 10 to 12 years since then, or yeah, 10 years. We're gonna have to turn things around in the way that is organic, and to do that, you have to have a leader on the bench, and people from the Bosnian Football Association believe they have the right guy. And we'll see. His fate on coaching the Bosnian national team depends much on what happens in the tie against Ukraine and in these playoffs. He's been the first one to say that he will leave Bosnia and Herzegovina if he doesn't go to the European Championships. Other coaches have said that previously, never did it actually. So we'll have to see what Savo does if Bosnia doesn't go. But let me reiterate that the atmosphere around this match is much more positive than it was the last time. You can expect 12 to 13,000. I mean, Andrew's been there at the stadium. Not a big stadium, but very like very vocal fans, very loud fans that can create a sort of atmosphere that is maybe a little bit even intimidating. Not that Ukrainian players are going to be intimidated. I mean, with the war going on and everything that's been going on, they shouldn't feel intimidated inside of a football stadium. That's the least of their concerns. I just hope that we have a great football match on our hands and we can enjoy a football show.
Definitely so. I just to take two steps back on one of the things you said you were discussing there, Harris. You mentioned about the Federation. Now, when we went into the game back in 2021, there were a number of problems with the Federation back then. What is the situation now there? Just for our listeners who might be curious about it, and has that had an impact? As you said, sort of the three managers over the last 12 months, has that had a role to play in the situation?
Yeah, of course. And the problems are pretty much still there. But the problems in recent weeks and months have been like willfully put aside from almost everyone, the fans and the media that are looking into the problems, because everyone is sort of understands that this is a unique opportunity for Bosnia and Herzegovina, who isn't having the best players or the best team to go and play a European championship. So this could be a one of a kind opportunity for us. It would be the first time that we qualify for the European championship. We went once to the World Cup in Brazil in 2014. We never went to the Euros. And this is like our best chance, because if we beat Ukraine, we still play at home with one of the two remaining national teams. And I don't think we'll ever have a better opportunity to have to be able to play like for the big for one of the biggest stages in football. And so all of the problems have been kind of put aside. And nobody's like really bothering the people in the federation, the coaches, the players, the other people that are running the things until this playoffs go through. If we manage to qualify for Euro 2024, it will have an unfortunate effect in the sense that a lot of the things that are bad and that are still going on in the Federation are going to be covered by this result, and we will probably never have the strength to drive things to the surface and know stuff for what they really are. If we don't manage to go to the European Championships, maybe it will be a little bit easier to work as a member of the media. Because we won't have to deal with the pushback of a part of the fans that are saying there's no problem since we qualified for the European Championships. So it's always a kind of a give and take. But yeah, the problems are still there. They never went away. Maybe some of them are worse than they've ever been. There are some positive things that are happening as well. But they're overshadowed by stuff that is not so good for Bosnian football or sports in general.
Couple of questions from me. I'm going to go with the positive one. No, I want to save the positive ones for the end. I do have to ask because it's been discussed a lot in the Ukrainian media over the last week. The national team have called up four players based in Russia. You mentioned one of them earlier on there. I recall. What sort of role do they have within the squad? Are they important players? And is, what was the take about them being part of the team?
Okay, Ivan Bašić has been a positive surprise in the last matches of the qualifying groups for Euro 2024. He made his debut in the national team, and he was a breath of fresh air, even though he's not considered one of the quality players or one of the better players that Bosnia and Herzegovina has at this moment. There's been a period of time where I think some of the players in the Bosnian squad in the Bosnian national team have considered themselves irreplaceable, and maybe even a little bit of complacency came around when playing matches. So in a delicate moment, Bašić was one of the players that came in and gave us at least good energy and security in midfield, so that we can be more secure in thinking that we're not going to get so many goals that we've been getting lately. Also, Amar Rahmanović, one of the players that plays at Samara, has been okay, has been doing okay, has been, I think, score once or twice in the last qualifiers, which was a surprise, because when you have to shake things up constantly, you are basically sometimes playing a game that sometimes you don't know what you're getting when you are calling up some of these players. But they're not considered the best players in the squad. All of the players that have been they're coming from the Russian league and the Russian teams. It's they've been called up essentially because Bosnia and Herzegovina is a really, really small country, and we don't have a big pool of players that we can count on to have the width or the depth in the national team to be able to play with the biggest of the national teams. With quality. So that's basically the reason why these guys are called up. Talking about Said Hamulic, who signed for Lokomotiv Moskva, he hasn't played football in 2 years, but he's been called up to the national team. And we asked Savo Milošević why, and he said, "I need that kind of I need that I need a player with that profile." I know he's not been playing. I know he's out of form. I know he's not been doing great. But in a situation in a game where I see an opportunity to let him play, he has been working extremely hard, and there's a possibility that he can give me a goal, that he can give me something that can tip to our advantage. So that's basically why. If Bosnia has Herzegovina had 80 million, like 80 million citizens and many more players, I believe that the players that would be called up are all players that are playing in their clubs, that are in good form or in the or in the best form possible. Sadly, that is not possible, since there's only 3.7 million of us. And we're like really, really tight with talents. We also have problems with other countries, quote unquote, stealing our talent. Because for anyone that doesn't know, just a quick recap: Bosnia and Herzegovina is a country where many people from other nationalities live. Some are ethnically Croatian, some are ethnically Serbian. And quality players that are born in Bosnia and ethnically Croatian or Serbian often want to decide to play for Croatia and Serbia. So Bosnia and Herzegovina, with a pool this small, is still losing talent to other countries that are around. So it's been really, really tough. That's why we're a really proud, like, footballing nation, and when we have talent, we let everybody know about it. I don't think there's a person in Ukraine that doesn't know who Edin Džeko is. Where so what mission accomplished there. But yeah, we have to safeguard and keep our talents, and we don't have many players, and the quality ones, the
the top level ones are even less, are even more hard to find. Sorry.
But what's the take on the actual players going to Russia? Because obviously, like you mentioned, a few of them have actually just recently moved there. And obviously, there's no like European prospects or anything like that. And most of those players, if I'm not mistaken, were playing maybe not in top European leagues, but at least in, prospective European leagues. What's the deal with them actually going over there? Is it just the money? What's the
Yeah,
appeal?
I think that since the scandal, since the scandal when the Bosnian Football Association decided to accept the invitation from the Russian Football Association for to play a friendly in St. Petersburg, there's people have been much more mild about players going to play in Russia and so on. There's been enormous pushback, and imagine I've talked to Andriy Shevchenko, and this is my childhood idol. We've messaged on WhatsApp, which is something that I've never dreamed that I could do in my entire life, and I'm enormously like proud of myself for that. In that period, I asked him, could you please send a message to the Bosnian people and to the Bosnian Football Association why this match should not like happen? And he like kindly responded in a few sentences that I published on my on our website at N1. He was, I mean, from that point on, the interest about players going to Russia and playing with Russian teams or with the national team kind of faded. But I still don't think that people would be okay with it. You know, it's only that the players make personal choices and they have to play somewhere. If the best place for them is Russia, being fully aware that they won't be playing any European football and everything that comes with it, with the sanctions on Russia, people are kind of fine with it. They don't have any say in it, and they're not protesting about it. But with the national team is another matter.
On one final note, though, and I know Andrew's going to talk from the Ukrainian perspective about this in a second. What does the future hold for the national teams of Bosnia and Herzegovina? How are the under-21s, under-19s, under-17s? What's the shape of football over there at
Yeah.
the moment in general?
So I know that you wanted to end on a positive note, but this is not going to be this is not going to be so positive, partly because of the reasons that I already mentioned in my other answer, which is that Bosnia and Herzegovina is losing talent to neighboring countries since we hold in our borders many nationalities and many ethnic groups. Just last week, we lost a very, very talented player that plays for Dinamo Zagreb. His name is Petar Sučić. He's 20 years old, and he received a call from the youth national team coach of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and he decided sadly to decline that call up since Croatia was also calling him to play for their national team. And he informed first his coach and then other people from the football association that he won't be accepting any more call ups from Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is in some ways fair if you don't like feel that the country you're living in is your country. It's okay, but it's also not okay to accept previous call-ups and play for the country until the country you want calls you up. So that's kind of a problem that we're having in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and still we're managing, I think, to be
okay, we could be doing a lot better with the national team. So it is what it is. We keep pushing forward and striving to make Bosnian football better. I think more the fans than the actual football association sometimes, but it's a thing that will have to be resolved one way or the other at one time or another. Everybody, what is important here is that everybody now in the next week or in the next 10 days is focused on these playoffs, and that there are nothing is on the minds of the footballers and on the media and of the fans. We want to be at our best to try to beat you guys and go through to the final and ultimately to Euro 2024.
Harris, it's been lo really has been lovely talking to you tonight and listening to you. It's been a real pleasure. I wish Bosnia the best of luck at the finals tournament in 2028. I think it'll be a fantastic tournament for you, and I'll be cheering you
Likewise,
on
likewise.
there. I mean, I had to mention about the youth teams. I know Andrew over the past few weeks has been following the under-17s for the Ukrainian team. Have had a fantastic qualification period. Am I right, Andrew?
Absolutely. So they got a new manager, Yuri Moroz, and 3 out of 3 wins in the elite round of qualification. So Ukraine will be playing at the under 17s Euros this summer in Cyprus. And I mean, you look at that under 17 squad and you're like, wow, this is pretty promising for the next generation of talent. It actually isn't too dissimilar from the under 17s that played in the back end of last year, but they only luckily made it into the elite round of qualification, which is the qualification just before the main tournament, through finishing in third place or something. However, and that was, I think, under the tenorship of Volodymyr Jezerski. But this time round, like I just mentioned, Moroz in, 3 out of 3 wins, and some interesting talent to look into. Of course, Ilya Voloshin, who recently signed for Real Madrid, he's in there, the 6'7" huge player that everyone's, calling the next De Gea or something like that. That's cool to see that he's in there. Dmytro Stilchuk, who plays for Bayern Munich's academy. You've got Kirilo Dikhtiar, who's at Metalist at the moment. I think he's one of the youngest ever players to debut in the UPL. He was playing age 15 last season. There's news from Ukraine, I think from Ihor Tsakhanyk, saying that in some of these games over the past, few weeks, he's been scouted by Manchester United. So that's cool to hear. He's a centre back. Let's see how that goes. And then you've got also Demian Tretiak, who's Dynamo, similar, also a defender. He's also apparently being monitored by Manchester United. So we'll see how that goes. And then going, forward in the team, you've got Alexander Drahan, who's at Atalanta. Bogdan Oluchenko, who's at Bayern as well. And then the forwards, who I think made the biggest impression during these 3 games. Artem Stepanov, he scored, I think, 2 or 3 goals. Really promising player, playing for Bayer Leverkusen under 19s, under 18s at the moment. There's a chance that he might be upgraded to the senior side, or at least train with them that's for some matches from next season. That would be interesting. And the same goes for Dmytro Bogdanov, who's at Dynamo Dresden. He's scored a fair few goals in this window as well, and he's got a chance of making, senior movement for his club side next season too. So the future is bright for now. Let's see how it goes. But with obviously this tournament coming this summer, there's also the news that FIFA recently are planning on doing the under 17 World Cup every year now. And it's going to be hosted in Qatar for the next 5 years. So the more appearances that Ukraine get at these final tournaments, I think the better it will be for development. But it's really good to see that this scouting that we mentioned is working across Europe. And
Vision under Rebrov, overseen by obviously the new UEFA president Andriy Shevchenko, of this new Zbirna national team vertical that is meant to be going from top to bottom, bottom to top, where Rebrov wants everyone to play in a particular style, work towards similar goals so that all of these players are ready to play for the national team senior side when they get to it, and to have more representation at these bigger tournaments such as the Euros, under 17s ones. FIFA claiming that they're going to be doing the under 17 World Cup every year now for the next 5 years or whenever that's going to start. So hopefully Ukraine will have some representation at least one of those in the near future. And yeah, and then you talk about that, and this week as well, on top of, this huge playoff, there's plenty of other national team football to follow Ukraine-wise. You've got the under 19s, who have got a new manager as well, Dmytro Mykhaylenko, ex Dnipro 1. He was recently in Cyprus. Now he's the under 19s manager. And in his debut squad, who's he called up? Christian Shevchenko, Andriy Shevchenko Jr., who's currently playing for Watford Academy, playing quite well there, had quite good form at the start of this season. And yeah, there's obviously been talk about does he deserve a call up because he can't speak Ukrainian, or he's not born in Ukraine, he's from England, and like he's born in England, got an American mum, and all this, the typical stuff that you're always going to hear, and people saying, is it just nepotism that, oh, Shevchenko became the UEFA president and suddenly his son's in the under 19s team? But I mean, if you look at it from like an actual ability point of view, he plays for Watford Academy. Okay, it's not like Premier League Academy or whatever, but it's still a very highly thought of academy. He's in quite good form there, scoring regularly, especially since the start of the year. So why not give him a go, in my opinion? And fingers crossed, in there, I think they've got elite qualifying, two, three matches that they have to obviously finish top of to qualify for their own Euros, that they do so. And as well as in that team, we've got Danilo Krivsun, who's currently tearing up for the under 19s of Borussia Dortmund, another example of a player who left Ukraine at the start of the war and is now excelling at a top European academy. And there are real high hopes for him. There was lots of controversy last year when he didn't get called up by the previous manager. And here he is in the team. So good luck to him. And then obviously Timur Tutyarov, who we know playing for Sunderland at the moment, fairly regularly, doing quite well. He's also in the squad. So, and as well as that, there's a few other players that also are ones to look out for. Yeah, one that plays for Hanover, Maxim Strukov, a really exciting fullback that I think's been doing quite well in their academy system too. So literally, it's like a double-edged sword, of course, that Ukrainian football domestically is going downhill a bit, quality-wise, academy-wise, from a elite level anyway. And then you've got all these players that have either left due to the war, or some of them, like Christian Shevchenko's, who've been born abroad and are sort of now being looked at by UEFA, which is something they have neglected over the last, I don't know, 3 decades of scouting talent that live abroad, were born abroad. This is like even an example from a Bosnia perspective. A lot of their players that were in even their golden generation were born abroad because of the Bosnia War, and then ended up becoming huge stars, such as, Miralem Pjanic, who grew up in Luxembourg. And so it's something that I think is very exciting from a UEFA perspective, that they are focusing on these scouting things. Like we mentioned in our last episode, if you haven't listened to that, with Jerry Luchka, who's a scout here in the UK for England and previously at Man United. But there's this opportunity that these talents are now being looked at, and like Shevchenko personally calling these scouts up and saying, can you help us out? And a little update on the main topic of last week's pod, Zahari Bauman, Zach Bauman. He since made his debut for the Manchester United under 21s side. He's played two in a row for them. So that's great to see. Obviously, still only 17. And he's not got a call up for the under 19s this month, sadly, because of he's not got his Ukrainian passport yet. But potentially, we might be seeing him at some stage in the near future, maybe in June, maybe in the autumn. But looks like that's in progress.
You know, not even that. Think about the under 21s. They've got a friendly against Morocco under 23s this week. And then next week, they've got a qualifier against Azerbaijan, which I think is going to be played in Turkey, if I'm not mistaken, as Ukraine's home venue for that. So that's also looking positive. Obviously, they've started the campaign, I think, 5 out of 5 wins. As we have mentioned already, no Brashko, no Vanat. Can some of the other players step up into that position? Will they be able to? Of course, the strikers in that perspective without Vanat is Ihor Krasnopir, who from Ray's beloved Oberlin, and you know, some of the other players, especially from Ruch, Kvasnitsa is going to get another shot at it. Maxim Brahara, who's been playing well for the under 21s, even last year as well, going to be joining Dinamo in the summer. And Yehor Yarmoliuk, of course, who we want to see progress further each time, getting sub appearances in the Prem still. I think he's just not there yet to get a senior call up. But if he continues, obviously, at the pace and, you know, maybe from next season starts getting more regular starts and runs in the team, then maybe he might be able to get that upgrade into the national side. And of course, not to forget about a recall for Maxim Hlań, who's been performing really well in the Polish second league for Lechia Gdańsk. I think he's got in his past 4 games, he's got 3 assists, 4 goals, something. He's playing really consistently and he's looking really exciting. Buckaroo Banzai, obviously, Piotr Szronka, the Polish journalist, he says that he's the best player in that league. And that the Polish media are calling him the new Yarmolenko in terms of how he dribbles and all that kind of stuff. So good to see him back in there and being given an opportunity. And then on top of that, you think that's not enough, you know, youth for whatever national team football. And usually that is it, you know, senior team, under 21s, whatever. But because Ukraine have qualified for the Olympics, of course, this summer, a tournament that we actually have qualified so far, which is nice. We've got an under 23 friendly in Japan, which is, you know, that's also another mind-boggling thing. Sadly, I can't actually make it because of the timings of everything. Otherwise, I would have loved to have gone. You know, but some of these things, you know, that's just
Andrew's
life.
away tour goes
But
global.
that's got a really interesting and exciting squad of certain players as well. So Kirilo Fisyun, who's Kolos's number one, really great goalkeeper. Another one that, as Adam mentioned, sort of we're in a golden generation of Ukrainian goalkeepers. Unbelievable. Kirilo Fisyun. Over the past week, I think Tato Taquet mentioned that he had scouts watch him versus Veres from a Premier League club and a Bundesliga side. So that's interesting. But there's more rumours over the past, well, closer to the end of last week, that say that he's actually most likely going to be joining Shakhtar in the summer for 3 million euros, which I guess is quite a big price for a Ukrainian goalkeeper. But what does that mean for Riznik? And what does that mean for Fisyun? Who's going to be the number one there? We'll have to wait and see. But he's getting a chance with the under-23s because I think that he's not going to be starting for the under-21s in the qualifiers anyway. So it's better to have him actually be useful as a starter elsewhere. And some other interesting players in this under-23 squad. Anton Boyle from Zorya, who's on loan from Dinamo. Marian Farina, who's on loan at Metalist 925 from Shakhtar. Andriy Buleza as well. Yegor Matsenko, who's currently at Śląsk, Wrocław. In Poland, who's been having quite a good season there. He's getting, you know, his own look into things. And then, because a lot of the players that will end up being in Rotain's final squad for the Olympics in the summer are either currently with the under 21s or with the senior side, he's had to bulk up some of this squad with a sizable amount of Alexandria players. He's brought in a few there. Kirill Sehaev's in there, Denis Shostak, Artem Shulansky. All of them have actually not had too bad of a season thus far at the EPL, so fair enough that they're getting a go. Oleksiy Sitch, of course, at Ruch, has been having a good season, had a really good Euros last year. And then you've got some of the older talents that are going to be over 23 in this team as well. I don't mean like Yarmolenko or anything like that. I mean the likes of Oleksiy Kashchuk, who's been linked with a move to La Liga this summer, who's apparently called on Oleg Smalichuk to help him out with transferring over to Spain. Obviously, his contract ends in the summer, so he might be a free agent. That'll be interesting to see where that goes. And then, other players like Alexander Nazarenko, and then the centre forward, Mykola Kucharewicz, who, as of right now, I'm pretty sure has not played for Swansea for a number of games, and he's not even been in the matchday squad. So potentially he's either injured. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. We'll have to wait and see whether he actually ends up featuring in Japan. And if he doesn't, who is Rotan going to call up? Because there are no other centre forwards or strikers in the squad that he's called up. It's absolutely action-packed of an international break, guys. So I think that, people who say they hate it because they want to go back to club football, whatever, fine. But I think there is plenty of stuff to watch, regardless of obviously the big game that we've been discussing tonight, but plenty of other stuff to keep your tabs on too.
Got to say, before we go, Harris, what a fantastic guy. I hope he enjoys the game, just not too much. Harris, I've had the chance to get it in, but much respect to you.
And of course, guys, don't forget to check out watchupl.com to see LNZ versus Manai this weekend and those big matches once the UPL resumes in 2 weeks' time. Have a good one.
Till next time, everyone, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Bye-bye.